Harsha?
Yes. Good morning, everybody. Today I'm going to talk about the paper, Modeling Virtualized Application Using Machine Learning Techniques. My name is Sajib Kundu, and this work had been done in collaboration with Dr. Raju Rangaswamy, my academic advisor, and Dr. Ming Zhao from Florida International University, and also Ajay Gulati from BIMA, and Dr. Kaushik Dattu from National University of Singapore. So let's begin the talk. So we have been talking about virtualization, I mean, for quite some time, and virtualization has been thought of as sort of a boon. But what is the main advantage of using virtualization? The primary advantage is saving some physical resources. So before, data center used to have a lot of physical machines, but since after consolidation, the number of physical machines got reduced, and now we can run the same number of applications, but in a lot less number of physical machines. But saving some physical resources is not the only benefit of virtualization. Not only the cost saving comes in terms of the savings of hardware, but it also reduces the cost of maintenance and power. But there is another benefit of virtualization as well. Another benefit is that virtualization was thought to be to enable data center administrators to reduce the administrative complexity. Since we have so much control over applications, since applications run inside one virtual machine and we can control how much resources each virtual machine can have, so virtualization is thought to have provide this sort of control to those administrators. But does it really help in reality? Does it really help reducing the administrative complexity? Apparently, it's not, because since so many diverse applications are running and sharing the resources and sharing the, let's say, storage or purpose of cache, one application running inside one virtual machine may interfere with another application running inside another virtual machine. So performance interference creates a huge problem. And we don't have any well-known technique to capture this performance interference. So the drawback of having this performance interference is that in order to reduce this performance interference, what administrators or clients employ is just to make over-provisioning. So over-provisioning, again, it goes against the belief of virtualization and reduces the benefits of virtualization of having employing the virtualization in the data center in the first place. So management is still a cumbersome effect. So let's look about the scenario in cloud. So now in Amazon, you can go and buy a virtual machine in terms of memory and CPU and run your own application inside the virtual machine. And you pay some amount of money for rent in terms of capacity. But clients have to figure out how to size their virtual machines to run those applications. I mean, how do you know that you're in your web server, let's say you're running a web server, how do you know how much memory and how much CPU it needs? So, and there is no guarantee of performance from the cloud service provider. So cloud, what cloud service provider typically guarantee? If you ask for 1000 megahertz CPU or 20 gigabytes of memory, you're gonna get that capacity. That's the only guarantee you can have from the cloud service providers. But there is no guarantee as for the performance. So again, over-provisioning being employed. But if we really need to realize the full potential of virtualization or in the cloud service providers, we need to go from charging based on the capacity, from the charging based on the performance level, so that customers are being charged in terms of the capacity they're actually, in terms of the performance they're actually experiencing. And if your cloud service providers can guarantee you higher performance, you are supposed to pay higher prices for that. So how do you envision this charging based on performance level? In order to realize that, we need to understand how the effect of resources play on the application performance. Because we really do not have control over the performance directly. How can we control the performance of an application? Is by changing the resources allocated to a virtual machine. So we need to understand how the allocation of resources to virtual machine transformed into an actual application for performance. So performance modeling is essential for automating the cloud service management or automating the virtualized data center server management. But this is challenging due to several things, because there could be many types of application and many types of resources. And some resources are partitionable, like memory and CPU. Some resources are not, like storage or processor cache. And for those kind of resources, we need to account for the contention that might arise from the shared environment. And we need to provide a solution which should be which can be applied across different types of application, across different types of hypervisor solutions. And in our talk, whatever we are proposing follows these principles. So this is the outline of the talk. First, we are going to briefly talk about the related work in this domain. Next, we are going to talk about the parameters crucial for controlling the application performance and also for modeling. Then we are going to talk about the design of the performance model. After that, we are going to evaluate from different angles. And next, on the next step, we show that how our built performance model can be used for accurate VM sizing in the cloud environment. After that, we conclude. So let's start with the related work. So there have been related works in this domain for several years. People have been working on that. There are several types of work going on. You can classify it into several categories. The first classification is what I'm targeting, like how do you provision resources for virtual machines. So the first two bullets typically do that. The first one uses control theory, and the next one also uses control theory, but from the perspective of just to minimize the interference that might happen when you combine several virtual machines on a server. And there are another type of solution which is basically automating the performance violation diagnosis. How do you collect system history and manipulate it, and so that in later on you can automatically then diagnose it's a troubleshooting operation. But we look at the problem from a different perspective. We specifically address the what if questions. Like, what if questions mean, if you come up with a question like, okay, this is the amount of CPU, this is the amount of memory, and this is the storage IO contention you have, what would be your performance under those allocations? We specifically address that question. And to the best of our knowledge, this hasn't been addressed before. We sort of dealt with that question in our preliminary work, which has been published before in HPCA. And we use artificial neural network as our modeling tool to answer specifically that question. But we had several problems and several limitations regarding that solution, so we're going to talk about that later, and we propose how do we overcome it so that it can be used in a more generalized and robust environment. So let's first talk about the model parameters, so the crucial that acts as a controller, control parameters for our model. So these are the criteria we follow while selecting the parameters. First, we should encompass all the known type of high level resources like CPU, memory, storage. But we do not address two of the key other resource parameters, which is the network IO contention and also the CPU cache. But we deal with the rest of the things. These parameters should be easy to control and observe. And all the parameters, and since there is shared storage, we must account for the competition that might arise in this shared environment. And as you know, that the modeling complexity might grow if you put too many parameters into the model. So our goal is to keep the number of parameters as minimum as possible. And we'll show that with the use of only three parameters, we can model application performance quite accurately. And then it should be application agnostic, so that it can be applied to any type of application, and it should be widely available across different hypervisors or hardware platforms. So let's first talk about the parameter CPU. There are two schools of thought how you can model the CPU usage of application performance. First, based on the utilization, like there have been work what people did before, is that model the application performance in regards to the actual amount of CPU being consumed. But since in our environment we are more focused on the actuator, like we are more focusing on how to control the virtual allocation of virtual machines, we focus on rather on allocation rather than utilization. And since we follow the allocation as our parameter, we follow CPU limit as a controller. CPU limit is basically we followed our experiment in ESX, and CPU limit is basically provides an upper bound of a virtual machine of how much CPU it can use at any given time. And now let's see how the parameter CPU has an impact on the application performance. So in this experiment, we took a bunch of workloads, and we are going to use that workloads over and over again. So there's two profiles of Ruby workloads and the three profiles of file-based workloads. And we changed the allocation of CPU from 200 megahertz to 1000 megahertz and see how the performance changes. And the y-axis, we plot the performance normalized to 1. What is the key takeaway from this graph? The key takeaway from this graph, as you can see, the different applications behave differently with regard to the CPU allocation, which is quite expected. Moreover, they do not follow a specific function. Like you cannot put a function on the CPU and measure how much you cannot put a complete mathematical function to model the nature of this graph. So the nonlinearity is observed in this case. And the same thing happens in case of memory as well. And we follow the same principles. We follow memory allocation as the control knob, and we chose memory limit in ESX specifically for our control actuator. And we did the same kind of experiment here by changing the memory, keeping the CPU and IO contention levels same. And we measured the same things. Different applications behave differently with regards to memory. Some may saturate its memory requirement quite sooner than the others. So nonlinearity is again a phenomenon. And another thing is that it has some stepwise behavior. Like it can be stepwise linear. But one mathematical function cannot model the entire application of a parameter output space. But so far we have talked about the CPU and memory, but another important thing to note about is the storage. Why is storage different than CPU and memory? It's because we cannot put a hard capacity bound or the limit on the amount of storage and virtual machine can use. What we can do, we can prioritize the IO request at the IO scheduler level and put some level of control over how much bandwidth a virtual machine can have, but it doesn't provide any guarantee that you're going to get that amount of IOPS or that amount of megabytes per second. So somehow we need to account for the competition in the shared storage environment. Now the first thing comes to mind, what is the metric for indicating contention? We have tried with several parameters. The more important parameter is that why don't you take into account the amount of IOs coming from all the other virtual machines running on the same storage environment? But this can be misleading because your competing IO could be, let's think about an example like sequential IO versus random IO. If your competing IO workload is random, even with less amount of actual competing IO per second, you're going to experience a much higher competition than in the case when your competing IOs are sequential in nature. But if you're going to think, if you model the storage performance using the competing IO performance, it could be wrong. So what is the metric for accurately measuring the contention? Apparently, we found that the IO latency observed by the VM at the ESX at the hypervisor level is an accurate parameter. Yeah, and it takes into account all the differences that might arise due to nature of the IOs, like IO requests, the sequentiality, or so on. And we did the same kind of experiment. So here, what we did is that we ran each of the workload in a virtual machine, and we ran in another virtual machine, we ran a competing I/O workload, which basically generates and we control the number of outstanding I/Os arising from that virtual machine. And we increase the number of outstanding I/Os and we see how the performance gets degraded. As you can see, even in this case, some application might have no impact with contention, some application has huge impact with contention, like file went to a server. So again, non-linearity is a phenomenon. And now we are going to talk about the how do you, now you so far talked about the parameters, now using those parameters, how we model application performance. So here's our overall framework of the performance model. So virtual machine is responsible for, we are controlling the resource parameters from the virtual machine model level, and we are changing these resource parameters. So once we, and at an allocation, at a particular allocation level, we get a certain application performance metric. And we change these resource parameters and then get corresponding application performance metrics. Once we get sufficient data points, we feed this data into a, as a training and build the performance models. Now look at the plural here, so it could be confusing because one virtual machine, you need one model for one virtual machine. So you have n different applications, you need n number of performance models. So once the performance models are built, you come up with a query of candidate resource parameters and you ask it to the performance model and you give the predicted application performance. So that's the overall framework. So now what are the steps we first? First we collected some of the data by changing those resource parameters. Then we train the model. Now there are some intricate details of how the training happens. I'm not going to talk about this now. I'll be happy to take that question offline. And we separate out some of the data points for testing purposes. And once the testing is done, we check whether the accuracy level is enough. So if the accuracy level is satisfiable, we'll stop. Otherwise, we repeat the same procedure. Now, we try with two different modeling techniques. First, we try the simpler modeling techniques like regression analysis. And we try with several bunch of regression analysis with linear regression with involving quadratic terms, involving pairwise interactive terms. But we found that since these are complete nonlinear graphs, it's hard to model an application performance using a regression analysis technique. So then we tried with more complex tools like artificial neural network or support vector machine. And we found that we have, it's well known to model those kind of behavior. But is everything fine with that? I mean, you go to artificial neural network and use support vector machine regression process, but is it enough to satisfy your enough accuracy? But apparently not. We tried it in our previous paper with some simpler workloads and it worked fine, but when you moved into a more complex workloads and with involving a large parameter space, we saw that using a single model is not enough and the accuracy could degrade a lot. And so to highlight, we provide two benchmarks like Ruby's browsing and Ruby's reading, and as you can see the percentage errors are quite high in these two cases. So what's going wrong in here? So do we need to do something else? To illustrate our point, what we did is that in that graph, we plot on the x-axis the output values, and on the y-axis, we show the corresponding errors, the corresponding prediction errors. As you can see, on the lower output regions, there is a higher prediction errors. Now, what higher prediction errors? Now, what we did is that we did two different modeling, like for the lower region of the part and for the rest of the region, and and plotting on the next graph. And as you can see, that the prediction error gets dropped in this lower region. So what is the takeaway from this graph is that since these applications, you change your core allocation, like from, let's say, from memory, take an example. You are changing it from 512 megabytes to, let's say, 8 gigabytes or 10 gigabytes for a virtual machine. And the performance corresponding to those allocations might span a longer parameter space. So using a single model to cover the entire parameter space may not be enough. So we need to model several parts of this parameter space separately. Now the question comes, how do you automate this process? How do you create the multiple models? The first thing that would come into mind, why don't you just chop the input parameter space into some equal regions. But this might be inefficient since some applications might have no impact with some resource dimension. Let's say what we showed before, that Ruby's browsing has not much effect on the IO latency. So dividing the parameter space on the IO latency for the Ruby's browsing may not be helpful. Plus, the number of submodels using such could be too large to handle. But there is another way where we can divide the output parameter space, and that we follow here, is that you provide the entire output parameter space to our clustering algorithm, and the clustering algorithm divides the output parameter space into several clusters. And then you map those cluster boundaries to input parameter values and create submodels for each of those regions. I'm going to show an example to help you understand that. So let's talk about the Ruby's browsing workload. It changes its output parameter space from 6 requests per second to 126 requests per second. Now, how do you get the 6 and 126? 6 is basically some minimum resource allocation you can have on a data center setting, and 126 is some maximum amount of resources that's allowable in that environment. Now, once we get those output parameters, we put it to a clustering algorithm, and the clustering algorithm in this case figures out that two clusters need to be done, one from 6 to 24, one from 26 to 126. But this is in the output parameter space. But how do you go from output to, but we need to sort out divide into an input parameter space. So what we did, we mapped this region into the input domain. And it turned out that what it's saying that we need two submodels, one from 0 to 256 megabyte, another from whatever above 256 megabyte. And we do separate models across these regions. Now, the key thing is that these clusters might overlap, and there are techniques how we can handle this overlapping. I'm going to talk about that in offline. So far we have talked about the parameter selection and the design. Now we're going to have the evaluation. So we did our evaluation on the VMware ESX hypervisor, and we did it, and all the KSPMs are running Ubuntu Linux. And to as I said before, to simulate contention, we created a large virtual machine and ran an IO generator workload FIO and varied outstanding IO to create different levels of contention on the same host on the same storage. And to give you an idea, these are the training and testing data set sizes I used for my experiments. And after that, using those training and testing data points and using some modeling and also single model, I created this chart of the prediction error statistics. These are all summarized statistics, so I'm only giving average, medium, and 90th percentile. So just focus on the first two, one, Ruby's browsing and Ruby's bidding, and compare with using a single model, submodel is using the clustering techniques. You can see that in many cases, the errors are dropped substantially. For example, in the Ruby's bidding workload, the average error using a single model was 68-69%, but when you use submodel, it gets dropped to 7%. So the takeaway lesson is that submodeling really works. Now you might ask, is that when you use submodel, why don't you use regression family? I mean, it could work fine. Why don't you need complex techniques like ANN and SVN? But we did the same kind of experiments. We haven't shown it in the graph. We did the same experiments with linear regression family, but we have found the errors, even using submodeling, errors are too high to be acceptable. So now and this is another chart to show how the outputs follow the predicted values. As you can see, that those two are really close together. This is also using some model. So, and in this experiment, what we now so far we have talked about, okay, you can say that, okay, you're talking about the offline modeling, so you have the luxury to collect 200 data points or 200 training data points. But in real setting, you might not have time to collect data for the 200 allocation values. So what about collecting only 40 values? Let's see how the accuracy is. And so for this experiment, what we did, we from the final training data set, or the final, from the optimal training data set, what we have used in the, what you have shown in the, on the, on the previous table, we took out some fraction of it, but we took it more uniformly and more intelligently so that it covers the parameter space more uniformly. And we see how the accuracy changes. As you can see, even with the 20% of the optimal data set, the median accuracy is still satisfiable for most of the workloads. And that's really the point, that then, that the key takeaway from this graph is that we can use our technique in our in online approach as well. And in this experiment, what we did, because so far we have talked about more controlled environments, so every data is kind of perfect, but in real environment, the data might not be perfect. I mean, there could be several reasons where your data could be distorted. To simulate that, what we did, we picked up randomly 10% of the training data points and distort the amount by some percentage, like from 20% to 100%, plus minus 20% to plus minus 100%. And we see how the accuracy degrades. As you can see, that even in this case, even with 10% of the training points and even with 100% change of those data values, the error doesn't go up too much. I mean, for example, in Fireglade Web Server, it just goes up from 8% to 11%, and it follows mostly linearly. So it's still acceptable to be used, even if noise is introduced. So far we have talked about our approaches. On the next two slides, I'm going to talk about how we can use our modeling for accurate VM sizing. Now, what's the goal of the VM sizing? The goal of the VM sizing is that given a VM IO latency level or the contention level, and given a target performance, how do you estimate the required CPU or the required memory usage? So that when you apply this, when you size the VM with those estimated CPU memory sizes, at least it can deliver the target performance level. But and also that another important criteria is that these sizes should be optimal in nature. Why is what do I mean by optimal? What we mean is that when you allocate lesser amount of resources than what is estimated, you're not going to get that target performance. We use our performance models and also use a simple binary search routine to get to the estimate. Get to the required CPU and memory. So in this experiment, in this graph, so on the y-axis I plot the. Let me explain it in a better way. So we ran our algorithm. We gave several target performances, and we ran our algorithm, and it gives set estimates of CPU and memory. Now what we saw here is that when on the real setting, I apply the CPU, what is the performance I get from the actual performance I get from this application? And we plot that application performance on the y-axis. And here the target performances are all normalized to 1. But you can see from this graph that we are at least getting the required performances. And another takeaway is that we cannot have a scenario that one size fits all approach. As you can see, the estimated CPU are well spread across from 400 megahertz to 1500 megahertz. So the key takeaway is, again, target levels achieved in all cases. But are we optimal? To test the optimality, what we did is that, let's say you run the algorithm and it tells you that you need 1000 megahertz of CPU and 1 gigabyte of memory. But are these sizes optimal? Now, to test optimality, I reduced the. What we did is that I ran the experiment using 1000 gigahertz and 1 gigabytes of memory. And also, I ran the experiment with a little less amount of CPU, let's say 900 megahertz, and a little less amount of memory, to see that if we are getting that performance. If we are still getting the performance with reduced sizes, that means we are not optimal. And we plot the optimality in this graph, and the lower triangle represents the optimality of the CPU, and the higher triangle represents the optimality of memory. And if we do not reach the optimality, even with just a small delta changes, we try with several, go further to the 2 delta, 3 delta, to see that why are we, how far we are we from optimal. As you can see, that for most of the points, we are either optimal or we are close to optimal. So now to conclude, so we have shown that the performance modeling is essential for the cloud users and service providers. And we have identified three parameters which are sufficient for creating robust models. And we show that using submodels over a single model helps as it gets reduced as the 90%, as an example, I can show the 90th percentile errors drops from 102% to 29%. By the way, these are averaged across all the workloads I used. And these performance managed models can be used for effective VM sizing, and out of several target data points across two workloads, we found that we are either 65% optimal, and for the rest of the points, we are near optimal. Thank you, and I'll be happy to take questions. Let's see, 31.5 minutes. Yeah. I have to reduce some slides.
But you cannot plan for 25 minutes anyway, because there will be a few minutes of uncertainty. So you should plan for 23 minutes or 22 minutes.
Okay.
So you had to cut quite a bit.
That's my slide.
What?
Yeah, it's my slide.
Too many slides?
Yeah.
And also you can, I think that I made some notes about where you can speed up.
The harder part is that since it's a huge paper, like 12-page paper, there's so much content.
Yeah, everything. That's always the problem, mm-hmm. Right? You have to pick what you want to present. And in a lot of cases, you can get away by saying, okay, there are more details in the paper than actually walking everyone through those details. And you didn't do that enough. So you could do that more. Say there are details in the paper.
I usually use the number of slides as a guide.
Yeah.
I mean, if you divide 25 by 36, you will see that you have less than a minute for every.
It should be at least 1 minute, right?
I would say, well, I mean, depends on the slide, but you can think of, let's say, 1 minute per slide. It's
right.
Fine, so you can take two in one, half in one.
Right.
The number of slides are good indicator.
Right. Let's have questions about the content. Right?
Yes. Could you go to the beginning?
Mm-hmm.
You can start this. Sure. So.
What?
I think you can go slide by slide and
look okay.
At the open comments. Okay.
Cool.
You can do that. Okay. Well, that slide is okay. Yeah, I don't know where is Boone?
It's a kind of a blessing.
Okay, so it's fine then. Okay. No, because I thought you said Boone. I said, okay. Okay.
It's okay?
Yeah,
that's
no problem.
Okay. I think the first two slides, my only comment is in terms of delivery, was a bit shaky.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to be, you know, to make sure that you can confidently deliver crisply the initial content, because that also helps your delivery in the subsequent part of the presentation. And so if you feel good about the delivery in the first three slides, then you'll have an easier time doing the rest of it. So I think you rehearsed the first two or three slides, but the delivery was still quite a bit shaky.
I think I forgot I got a degree here. That's the problem.
Yeah, okay, so what you want to do is to write a script and read it many times over and over again so that you get it absolutely right. And the key is practice, right? And even the very first slide where you introduce the authors, you could do it more smoothly if you rehearse it and you know exactly what you're going to say. I think that's really important. Because a lot of people decide whether they want to listen to your talk or not based on the first two or three slides.
Mm-hmm.
And they may go back to their email if they are not engaged enough.
Or Facebook.
Whatever, yeah. So you really want to capture their attention within the first two or three slides by doing like a perfect job in those slides. But yeah, you can listen to what the way you delivered it and try to improve upon that.
No, well, the problem I had with this slide is that you essentially talk too much. And it wasn't clear the final message, because if you look at the points that you have there, they're very diverse. Right? I mean, one is an advantage. The first one is an advantage. The second one is a fact. The third one is sort of a problem. And then the fourth one is also sort of a problem. So there's no clear way to put them. So probably you should say, okay, it's a curse because of this and this problem. Right, I mean, because
what I can do, I can put these two on the previous slides, and
exactly, yeah, something like that. Because I mean, the first one is not a problem. That's
I think what's your point? I guess you wasn't mad there is how to manage that interpersonal.
Yeah,
just rephrase it.
Yeah, you should rephrase it, because consolidation, a lot of people think is a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the second one, maybe you meant how to satisfy diversity's demands.
Yeah, probably, yeah, if you reward them differently, then
they will sound more like,
but yeah, now, I mean, there doesn't seem like a central thing that connects all those points. And try to be more clear when you're explaining, for instance, performance interference, I know what it is, but it wasn't clear for your explanation. Mm-hmm. So try to make that a little bit more clear.
Yeah, I think I agree that in terms of technical depth, you need to go one level deeper, right? In many of the slides, including this one.
Yeah.
So I'm probably have to go now. Yeah. Send me your slides and I'll give you my comments.
If you have any, you know, one or two major comments, you could tell us now.
Major one is you. The architectural bar diagram you have on slide 15, that should come much earlier. Before you start to introduce your parameter selection. Before you talk about parameter selection, you probably want to say, well, that component is and the whole architecture. To me, the architectural diagram should come immediately after the motivation.
Okay.
Before you start to talk about the individual components.
Okay. Maybe even before the related work, like what we target.
This work is okay. I mean, after, before, I don't think that much.
But you can decide that.
Yeah, but that is before parameter selection. Second comment is when you're motivating this work, you just use a lot of text. I think it would be nice if you can use an example.
Yeah, I agree. Hi, Ajay.
Hello. Hi, Raju.
Hey.
Hi. Sorry, I got up a little late. And I'm just dialing in.
Okay, plus we have to do it again.
Yeah, we can have to do it again. We need more practice.
Okay. So my second comment is if you can use some data, some graphs to motivate why you want to do this, maybe you can get some results, how bad the regression is, and even how bad the error can be without using the sum modeling. Maybe those examples can be used to motivate why we are doing all this work.
Right.
Okay. And also maybe how bad it would be without considering the intention. Such as some examples. And that'll be easier to
find. I agree. I think that will be add more depth to the talk.
Right.
Also.
That would really convince the audience this is important and deal with the stakeholders and problem. And the third comment is I think a lot of figures that you use are still copied, very copied from the paper.
Let me do. Okay, you want to share the screen?
Do I need to do something for it?
Okay, but I don't think. Hold on.
Sending the PPT is probably easier, so
no, but right now he's on Skype, so screen sharing is very
strong. No, but that way he can see all the slides. Well,
I want Sajid to do another practice talk on Tuesday, based on the feedback. So I think that will be good. And I hope Ajay can attend that.
I think it should start now.
Okay.
Did you see?
Okay, I can see
the slides?
The slide, yeah.
Okay, perfect.
But can you send me a call of pain just in case I want to browse back and forth?
So Ajay, I was just mentioning that, you know, we'd like to have Sajib do another practice talk on Tuesday, you know, so that he incorporates all of the feedback from today. And so you'll have another opportunity also to give some more additional feedback. Especially because Sajib is already done with his practice talk today.
Okay, so that's fine. I mean, I know that he is done with the talk. I was just saying, like, I can send some comments on the slides itself.
Yes. Okay. Sure.
Let me see if I can send it from here.
And Tuesday is a good idea. I mean, you are the first speaker in the conference.
Oh, you're the first speaker.
Effort.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So you really need to practice well. Set the expectations right for all the other presentations.
That's a boom and curse. Yeah. Okay. Sajid, please send me the slides and I'll give you more comments.
I just sent it to you. Yes.
Okay. So those are the major ones.
Okay.
Sorry, that's absolutely wrong.
Okay. All right. See you. Thanks, Ming.
Bye.
Okay, should I continue from the next one?
Sure. Yeah. Yes.
So here I think again you talk too much in this slide.
I think what will happen is that I'm hoping what will happen is that Sajid will get a chance to listen to his delivery on each slide.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to your delivery on each specific slide, right? And then see how you can optimize the delivery and increase the technical depth also. Right. By, I think, Ming's suggestions about using examples as appropriate, I think that would be really good. For instance, when you want to talk about performance interference, if you can use an example to show, okay, two VMs are using the same shared storage, and you know, when one VM is running on its own, it gets a certain performance, and the other, and then when the other VM starts using the storage, then the performance degrades. So you could give an example to make this more concrete, because performance interference could mean many different things to many different people, right? And so you have to present what view of performance interference you are taking with respect to this presentation.
Okay.
If you give an example, it would be clearer.
So, Sajid, on this slide, it seems like the issues and the facts are sort of mixed up.
Yeah.
I mean, there is something which is non-facts. For example, cloud providers are offering infrastructure as a service. The second one is clients are renting memory and computing capacity. Then I think over-provisioning clear if that is part of the solution or part of the problem. And then the bottom points, they're all jumbled up, as in we have problems and issues and facts, and then you have a question also there. I mean, should we just put some thing that says this is the current situation, and then say these are the issues.
Right. And if you want to raise a question that you want to be, let's say, the central question of the slide, you may want to overlay a box on the entire slide. Right now your key question is sort of buried into the fourth bullet of the second set of bullets. So you can pull that out into a big box and put it, after you discuss the slide, put up that question.
Yeah, I mean, they do have to draw attention to it some other way.
Have you seen people do that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think that would be better. And I agree that issues, introduction, which is context, is there in one box. Can we actually close that door?
Yes.
And then we have a set of concerns in the second set of bullets. So that's good. I think you have separated them somewhat, but it could be further refine.
So maybe I don't need to put this information. I can just talk about it.
Yes, you could just talk about the first one. Yeah, you could just talk about it.
And just put on this and put the final question as our target.
Yeah, but for that you have to know what you're going to talk about, which is not in the slide, right? So you have to get that in your mind and address that.
I mean, if you go with that model, that requires a lot of practice. Because then if you miss saying that thing, the whole life would become useless.
Yeah. But I think it can be done. In fact, the good speakers do that, right, very easily.
Mm-hmm.
They provide the context before they jump into the details of the slide.
And the client in this slide seems to be pretty weak and helpless and meek. Is that intentional or is that just how the drawing looks?
It's both, I guess.
That was the easiest man he could come up with. Man drawing, line drawing.
We can have somebody with their computer or something, somebody who looks like a real client. This guy looks stout.
What should I put, like Arnold Schwarzenegger?
No, I mean there are faces with computers.
Okay, like a real image.
Yeah, this guy is a little. Yeah, he does look a little sorry. Unfortunately, that's pretty much what we had in the paper as well. Is that true? Did we have a guy like this in the paper?
No, we don't have such a picture.
Okay.
Okay, next slide. Yeah, I think this slide is also challenging.
The main issue with this slide is that there's too much text on the slide.
Okay.
Right? People will need at least 30 seconds to read through everything. And remember that you have less than 1 minute to not just have people read through your slide, but also listen to all that you're saying. And they cannot read and listen at the same time. Right? So that's one of the major issues here. So, like I said in one of the comments on your slide that I sent you your email, that you want to use sort of short phrases which people can read very quickly and understand the key message rather than entire sentences. Right? So if you see a full grammatically correct sentence, it probably doesn't
belong. I tried in several cases, but in some cases I couldn't come up with
that one is a full sentence. The first one is not a full sentence, but it's still pretty long. It's most of a full sentence. So you think about the key message and try to put together a phrase that has at most 3 or 4 or 5 words. Right? 5 is still stretching it. That's a challenge. I mean, if you want to make a good presentation, you have to spend time on sort of filtering out the message into those phrases.
Okay.
And
so here your contention is kind of framing that interference.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so you may want to stick to one of those words.
Okay.
Right. So either use contention or use interference, but don't use two words to refer to the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And probably change also the way that the points are presented, because application performance modeling is modeling the key probably wants to be at the end, because that's what you want to do. And the other one
I see it in a different way. I could do it like, what I see the way is that, okay, this is the way I should go. But to do that, we need to do this challenge, fulfill the challenges. So I can just separate out the key, like the idea, and the challenges separately.
Yes.
They should separate this point. You said contention needs to be accounted, then you said need for application and agnostic performance independent solution.
Yeah.
And it's like problems and solutions and challenges are all mixed up in this list.
Right. Yeah. So the other thing which I like to use is to, if I have a set of bullets that are leading to the same message, I like to make the set of, or the grammar in those set of bullets parallel, right?
Uh-huh. Okay.
So when you have, for instance, if you have need for an application agnostic and platform independent solution, that's too long anyway, but let's say that that's what you want to say. Then the previous bullet should be need to account for contention, right? Because you've changed the part or the form of the speech, and that's distracting for someone who wants to read through this really quickly, right? Because they don't know what this message has, because now you've changed the form of the sentence or the phrase. It's much easier if you stick to the same form in a set of bullets. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So how would you rephrase the contention then?
Either I could say solutions should be application agnostic and platform independent on the next slide.
You could do that. Or you could say in the previous bullet, you can say need to account for contention. Right, so that it matches with the next need for an application. Right? So these are just some stylistic things that you have to keep in mind.
You can also do something like the title will be need,
mm-hmm.
... and mm-hmm. then contention, mm-hmm. application, and not to.
Yeah,
okay.
So you can do a repeat need.
Yeah, that way you can save some a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah, but the title is already okay. What do we need? Right, and you can say contention modeling or accounting for contention, application agnostic solution, platform independent solution. You can break up, for instance, the last thing into two bullets, right? Because there are two different things there. Application agnostic solution, platform. So instead of having one long line, you could do those kinds of things also. Okay, let's move to the next one.
Okay. And I think it's a better way, like we list all the needs here, but put this one on the next slide, and what Ming suggested, like put some numbers there, using regression, using ANN.
Because that's not trivial.
So and show to just to confirm that it's not trivial, and accuracy could degrade.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, that's fine.
So this one, you sort of lay everything out, and I mean all the details of the related work, which may be okay. Just make sure that again your speech is similar or parallel in each of these bullets, right? Maybe it already is, but just keep that in mind.
Okay.
These are pretty long sentences actually.
But I did it like, most likely I'll forget the related work's description, so I have to read it out.
But if there is only four, so you can remember it, right?
So, Sajid, you can also use a presenter view and put some notes on the on the slide.
Oh, here?
Okay. And that helps a lot because it also gives you the next slide. It puts the next slide in a small format, so you can sort of make your way through the next slide more easily.
Okay.
That helps a lot, at least in my case.
Yeah, the other thing is that if you really need to make them long, which I don't know, probably you cannot do anything else, then you can give bullet, just uncover bullet by bullet. I think that is easier. Because then if you put the whole text right away, it's a little overwhelming.
Okay.
And people just give up right away, right? So if you make it bullet by
bullet. Bullet by bullet, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, I am.
Yep. May I go to the next slide?
Yes.
No, but just a quick question.
Yeah.
Are you planning to talk through each one of these in detail?
Not much.
But one thing I was thinking that in the recipe, because we have different subsections, why not arrange it in different subsections to say there is a lot of work on field theory, control theory, machine learning, and then under that put some citations, and then instead of talking through any of the specific citations, just mention at the high level the differences that we have in the table. I mean, I don't think it would help people to hear how Padala et al.'s paper is different from your paper and Cope is different. I think it would be good to have a high level understanding that where your work fits in the related literature, and what's the high level of contribution as compared to the existing work.
Yeah, I think that's a good suggestion. Yeah, especially because you've done quite a bit of work boiling everything down to that one table, right?
Mm-hmm.
So pull the key parts of that table out and present it here.
Okay.
Right. And that will give people more context of your work in this larger space. Right. So one thing which I was thinking is that because the parameter selection is something that we've addressed in previous work, we could possibly
skip
the parameter selection off altogether.
Okay.
So just point out the key difference, or point out which parameters we use, and briefly talk about it, rather than actually going into the graphs and such, right?
Okay.
No, actually, that's later when you talk about the modeling. Here, parameter selection. Okay, parameter selection didn't consume much time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because just three slides. Yeah. So maybe you should hold on to those. So here,
sure.
Okay, let's go back to the slide. Sorry. So here. Yes, so these are all the properties that you want for the parameters to satisfy.
Mm-hmm.
This is fine, I think. This looks okay to me.
Yeah, Ajay, you have a question?
Yeah, I was going to say that you directly jump into parameter selection. I might have in the previous slide, but have you talked about that the overall approach is to create the application performance model as a function of given input parameters.
Yeah, I think that was a comment we discussed earlier. Just to move one of the slides from later, can
yeah.
you do Ajay that slide which you're going to move before this?
Yeah, I have a slide like the overall framework is this slide. So the idea, the mean suggested that to move this slide is ahead of the parameter selection.
I see. Okay, I think then it makes sense because otherwise it comes very cold and I actually aren't clear why you just jump into parameter selection. It would be good to say that this is the high-level model and then you say the first thing that we need to know is what parameters in the model.
Okay. Yes, that's a good point.
And main thing I would say, the thing is, if you look at a lot of other papers and if you talk to people, they have done this work using thousands of parameters. In a lot of machine learning papers, they start with 1,000, then they apply some statistical techniques to make it down to 100 or 50, and then they use some learning on top of that. In your case, you're only using 3 parameters. And I think it's not a weakness, it's a strength. You should say that there are previous works where people have tried to using all kinds of VM and first level stats. But the problem there is even if you learn a relationship between a particular stat and the metric, it's not clear what to do with it. Because if the output metric is not behaving well, you cannot go and forcefully change a stat. You need to now understand the change to influence that particular stat itself. And to avoid that big pitfall, you are using directly the stats, directly the parameters that can be controlled right away. So you may lose some accuracy given that you are using fewer knobs, but overall the system is much more useful and functional in that sense.
Okay. And you can say that later on we show that the accuracy is still acceptable even with 3 parameters.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you can say that because you have numbers to show that.
Yeah, and for the application visioning, this is pretty useful. Your applications are how do you do better VM sizing,
mm-hmm.
or how do you do CPU and memory resource allocation from the capacity point of view. It's not about figuring a particular stat to be lower or higher.
Okay.
I think all that you should mention on the parameter selection slide. And then once you go to the next, you say, see, these are the 3 parameters that choose. And as I told you that it's going to be a few actionable parameters, these are the ones that we have.
Okay. Yep.
That's a good suggestion, yeah.
Yeah, I think that introduces this parameter selection part of your presentation very well.
So in this slide, should I skip this part about discussion about utilization versus allocation? That will save some time.
Yeah, you seem to spend quite a bit of time trying to argue for utilization.
I mean, this is for the first paper, but this is not the part of this paper.
Yeah.
If somebody asks any question, I can then tackle that.
Right. Well,
no, but the question is, how will they understand? I mean, they need to know that what you are looking at for location, and that's what you are citing. Mm-hmm. And the fact that something is part of previous paper doesn't exclude it from the talk.
You have to say that you're using CPU allocation as the parameter, right? And the question is whether you want to discuss the alternative which other people
exactly,
have
that,
used,
that's my point.
Which is the use of CPU utilization as the parameter. That's really what you're debating right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think as long as you state it very crisply and quickly, I think it's okay to leave it in there. There is some value to having it. Because naturally people think about CPU utilization as the parameter. Right? Very few people think about allocation because in past work, it has been utilization.
Mm-hmm.
That has been the dominant CPU resource parameter. So there is some value to keeping it there. The other thing is you're sort of mixing the parameter selection with the model complexity, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're saying, okay, we're going to use parameter selection and here's the reason why. So, and let me show you one more thing. If I use the parameter, actually, the behavior or the relationship between the parameter and the performance is still very it's still complex, and you need to be careful about how you construct the model. So you're mixing these two messages in one slide. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the part that may be a little confusing. You may want to pull out these two messages in two separate slides. And you can what you can do is that you can combine the discussion of parameter selection for all three resources within one slide, because there's not a whole lot of text related to that. It's just one box on the left hand side, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you talk about what is the relationship of these parameters to the performance and why it's not modeling is not trivial, even though these parameters are just three parameters. And then you can have maybe one slide of the chart and the bottom box for each parameter within separate slides.
Okay.
Because this is mixing two messages, and that's what I want to try and avoid if you can. This way, I mean, the reason I'm saying that is if you mix these two messages, each message sort of loses some value. Because right? you're sort of forcing them, pushing them into the same space. But both are equally important to say.
So what are the two messages? Sorry, I missed the distinction.
The two messages is that, what are our parameters? And
what is the parameter for CPU?
Yeah, what is the parameter for CPU?
And why?
And another message is what is the impact of that parameter on application performance?
I see, okay. Yeah, so I think the first two bullets that you have on the left-hand side, they belong to describing the parameter and in the real system.
Right.
I mean, I think we should discuss that you are not using utilization, you are using allocation, and the way you are getting it is by setting the limit. And I think you should also mention that you are making reservation equal to limit in this case to guarantee that. Because otherwise somebody can ask that limit is this much, but you may not get that much.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you have said that this is the parameter and this is how we are setting it, is that we took 5 applications and then we varied the value of the parameter to measure the performance and here is a plot. So the whole of the stuff, the chart and the bottom box, they can come later on the slide.
Okay.
Yeah. So you can talk about each of these three parameters first and then the relationship to performance.
Okay.
And then the message becomes more clear.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you focus on one thing at a time.
Yeah, actually, I think that's a good point.
Okay, so I think the same goes with the memory.
Yes, same goes with memory.
And this is the storage.
Right. So storage is special because we have more things to say here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, can't we make all three parallel?
Storage, I need to do it probably separate.
You can,
but why even bring computing look at everything? Do people need to know about that computing domain IOPS can be misleading?
That's a good point. I can probably skip that. But
yeah, skip it entirely. Yeah. Because there are more questions that come up if you talk about that.
And I have to explain properly.
Yes.
Yeah, plus this is something that you already explained in the base. In the talk, they need to know what you have done.
Yeah.
Okay. So we can just say, okay, this is, we need to find an important metric for contention, and we found VMware relationship to be,
yes,
okay, to be that metric.
Yeah, that's the parameter, storage parameter,
mm-hmm.
right? So I think you can make all three parallel, and that way you can save much more time. You talk about CPU limit, memory limit, limit equals reservation, right, like I just said, and then storage IO latency as a third parameter.
Okay.
And then you talk about the dependencies to perform.
Oh, okay. I think then also I can save a lot of words, right? We can just say, okay, non-linearity, complexity, that all the things will come to the same three graphs.
Yes.
Okay.
I think when you come to storage, you should highlight the problem. When you come to storage, you say, so okay, talked about reservation and limit on CPU and memory, which are relatively easy to do and set.
Mm.
When it comes to storage, life is much harder. And it's not easy to get a fixed number of IOPS from any device, and most of the arrays don't give good performance isolation. And once you highlight them, then you highlight other concerns, that CPU and memory are host local resources, whereas storage is shared across multiple hosts. So in order to get around all the challenges of storage, we use VM IO latency as the parameter, which we found correlates very well with the application performance, and there is a chart to show that.
Right. I think
so people should be excited that they learned something that they
learned,
that you could have done something simpler for storage, but simple things don't work in this case.
Right. Yeah, I think that's very true. What people are looking from a talk is how much they can learn. And sometimes if you slip the learning in a very subtle manner, that they don't sense it, then the value of your talk is reduced. So you have to highlight what they are learning. Right? So this is a very, very nicely put by Ajay, how to introduce the IO latency parameter.
We already talked about it.
Yeah.
It should go in the
beginning. This slide is fine. We've looked at it many times before.
This is important, I think.
Yeah, this is important, yes. And I like how it's simple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, this.
This one.
It looks also okay.
Yeah, this is good, except that if you can somehow highlight the second bullet of each of these,
mm-hmm.
because they are actually the properties of these models. So the first thing is just a listing of all the modeling.
Okay. So can you just say properties?
No, you can say something like that's a bad thing, that one cannot model complex behavior, and this one can. So it's a good thing that this one can.
Yeah,
so
I mean, for instance, put it in a red box and put this in a green box.
Okay. Okay.
Right.
Put it like this and then. Okay.
Okay.
I was thinking that put everything on in the beginning, maybe. I don't know.
Can you go back one? I mean, did those numbers show up big in the beginning, or did they become big later on?
No, in the beginning.
Yeah, you might want to keep them small, and then to draw attention, make them big.
Okay.
And otherwise, I mean, for me, and from this distance, I actually cannot really make out that the first two numbers are bigger very easily, that the first two numbers are bigger than the rest. But if you start small and then make them big, it'll be one of these.
Okay.
So, Sanjeev, I don't understand the title of this slide. It says, all is well. Are people expecting to go wrong, or I don't even know what's supposed to go wrong?
Yeah, the transition into this slide has to be very nicely done for the title to make sense.
Okay.
Right. And I think you can work on that.
Yeah.
But what does the title mean here, all is well?
The title means here is that, okay, we talked about, okay, the evolutionary tools does a better job in handling complex characteristics, but then is the straightforward use of those techniques good enough? So we're just done with modeling once we use artificial neural network or support vector machine. So that's what is the next slide is showing, like, okay, then we show that not everything is well. We need to do a much more work than just simple using ANN or SVN. That's the whole point of this slide.
So I think you can make the title more descriptive, because all is well is kind of an abstract title, and some people may not get it.
Okay.
Right? And it's better to be clear and concrete, and so especially in slide titles, right? So you could say something like, using naive usage of SVM of machine learning techniques or something like that.
Okay.
Using machine learning techniques naively, and then you show the problems with that, right? Which is basically just you're showing data. You're not saying why. Just saying, okay, we use them, and here's the accuracy numbers we got.
Okay.
I mean, I would just put a title which would say something like ANN based modeling or basic ANN
machine
modeling.
Machine
and
learning.
And then after you say this, then the highlighted point that can come that can say direct application of such models isn't good enough. That's the takeaway from the slide.
Yeah, that could be that one box at the end. I think that would make more sense. So introduce the title and the data by just saying, okay, ANN and machine learning based modeling. You can conclude with that message. Yeah.
Okay.
I think I'm gonna skip that slide, or is it important?
This one.
I have to skip some part at least.
Yeah, you can.
And just tell them
that. Yeah, you don't need this.
Because you have the other one that does more.
You don't need this.
This is probably important, I think.
I think.
No, you have to introduce the problem first.
Yeah.
You have to put the other slide where.
Why do you need multiple models? Right.
Exactly.
Why do you need multiple models? You can say that. Okay, when we looked at the error distribution, we found that certain portions of the parameter space led to greater error, and this indicated that the model was not able to predict accurately in some portions of the parameter space. So we explored the possibility of creating multiple models. And then I would say, directly go into that animation where you talk about how you create, you know, using an animation. You take the input space, break it up, this one. Because a lot of text is okay in paper, but in this previous slide is.
Yeah, so probably what we want to do is have the go back two slides. I would suggest having the first figure sort of highlighted.
Mm.
Okay. Big showing that the problem is because of those few points over there. And then you have all these other clusters. So introduce there the idea that you can cluster that group, make a model for that, and then make a different model for all these values. And that way, then you get the
You don't even need the other one.
Yeah, you can just
focus on this one.
Right? Yeah, just focus on that one. Say that you can clearly see a cluster there, and signal the cluster, make a circle there, and another cluster here, and then go to the slide that's two levels after this one.
Okay.
You don't need to go into the details, I think.
This one, right?
Yeah,
right.
I think if you can describe
the process.
Go directly into this one.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because this one already explains how the process that you were describing.
Yeah, it's sort of reiterated.
Yeah, you're wasting time here. Because
yeah, and it's a lot more clear in this one than in the other one that's just X.
So we get rid of the slide 21, I think.
Yes.
And in slide 20, we get rid of one of the charts.
One of the charts.
Yes.
Okay.
So, Sajid, is this...
Yes.
Sorry, I was just going to say, can you go back two slides?
Yes. Here or even before?
So the thing is that in this, this output is shown on the x-axis.
Yeah.
Right? But then when you do your modeling, you do everything on the y-axis. Go forward two slides.
Yeah.
I mean, this diagram overall is nice. I'm just wondering, is it possible to have it on the x-axis and draw the tree going bottom up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just flip it over.
Yeah, you have to be consistent.
Because otherwise it gets confusing that previously the points are on the x-axis where the range is there, and now on y-axis you are splitting data.
No, actually, wait a minute.
I mean, these are two different things. It would be nice to actually have it in the curve itself. So from that plot that you have, there itself you can identify clusters. And then create sub-clusters.
So use that same figure and overlay this process on top of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
okay.
And go through the different steps of the process.
And if that figure is not as simply put, create your own figure that's a representation of that figure.
Mm.
You don't have to use the exact same figure from the paper. You're highlighting a concept, just create a figure that have points and feel free to make them bigger and bolder because that figure is too weak.
Yeah.
The points are not even visible on that figure.
Okay.
And then from that, just highlight the concept.
Yep. Yeah, that will make your presentation more professional, certainly. Because you're tying all of these slides together.
Mm-hmm.
People can see that you really put an effort into your presentation. They appreciate
it. Yeah. I was thinking this is the first slide, the first presentation in the conference, people would have high expectations.
Certainly, yeah. So you're the first presentation of the conference, not of the day. Oh, so that's on the first day, you're the first one.
First day, first one, and that's the only talk on that slot.
What?
That's the only talk on that slot.
What is it?
Because
there is a break after that.
You mean it's not multi-session?
No.
Okay, yeah.
So it's basically the session only has your talk.
Yeah.
So that means that the whole session is your talk. So you have to do as good a job as of three talks in the session.
That's true, yeah.
You should learn as much more.
No problem. The good thing is that you can relax after that.
Well, the good thing is that you're practicing ahead of time, so we have, and you're going to do some more practice talks.
I have to find a good scotch there.
What?
Good scotch before.
Good scotch?
In the morning.
Do you want that?
Irish coffee.
You probably want to drink coffee, not scotch. Yeah.
Well, you can drink an Irish coffee, right? You have both.
Okay, so this is okay.
I got it. This is fine.
Just
don't spend too much time on this slide.
Yeah.
But isn't this important to show?
I mean, if we can make this slide more professional looking by making it
a table.
The table?
Yeah. Putting like hardware, hypervisor.
Now that I know that you're the first talk of the first day, I think you should spend some time making this slide look nicer. Yeah. Put it into a table.
Okay, this one.
Yeah, so there is some animation going on, right, with these numbers?
No, not in this one.
Not in this one. Okay.
You can talk about all the numbers you have there, right?
Yeah, here you can make it nicer
mm-hmm.
by just presenting the workloads first, and then the training points, and then the testing points. Right? Do the animation here. And because you're going to talk in that sequence, right?
Yeah.
If you, here are the benchmarks we used, and so forth. And we chose, we went through the training process that we discussed earlier, and we came up with so many training points for each of these benchmarks, and here are the testing points.
So one general comment, Sajeev, when you have, there you have lots of blank space. You can just make the font bigger. That helps always, right? You can make the last two columns tighter and make the first column larger and make the overall font a lot larger.
Yeah.
That usually helps a lot in readability.
Yep.
I mean, the overall table will be bigger, but it's okay. I mean,
because I don't have any text in the slides.
So yeah, exactly. But yeah, it helps overall presentation.
Yep.
What's your one line takeaway from this slide?
The takeaway of this slide is that to prove the point that we have tried, that our testing and training data set are sufficiently large. I mean, we haven't just tried with 10 points or 20 points and come up with convenient statistics numbers. So our data set is big enough.
So that's what you're going to say once you have talked through the slide, saying this shows the training set is large enough and we have gotten a lot of training points and testing points.
Yeah.
Okay, I think for every slide, have that one line written at the bottom. And if that one line doesn't sound very strong, as in you don't care if they should get that message or not, feel free to drop the slide.
Yeah, that's
a good suggestion. So I don't know how critical this thing is to have it as a separate slide just to say that you have enough training and testing points.
Yeah, you could have it as a backup slide, I think.
Somebody asked, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good
Yeah, or while talking, you can say that in overall for experiments, we have roughly 100 to 150 training points and close to 100 testing points.
Yeah.
And that's it. You don't have to put this whole slide. If the only takeaway is you have enough points, you can just say that in words.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can mix it up with that one line message in the previous slide with the setup. You could do that, or later on. I don't know what slide is coming up after this.
After this,
and I think,
number.
So
okay.
First of all, you are already on slide 25. How are you? Did you do well on time?
No, I'm 5 minutes above.
No,
like 7 minutes.
You're more like 8 minutes over, because you have to plan for 23 at most. You don't plan for 25. Because there will always be some technical issue that in the beginning, right, where you lose at least 30 seconds to 2 minutes, right, in the switching and whatever, right. So you have to plan for 23 minutes. And you are at 31 and a half minutes, which is quite a bit over, 8 minutes over.
I think you should not have more than 20 slides. 20 slides, you probably can do it in 23, 25 minutes. More than 20 slides is very hard.
Well, the thing is that he also has those intermediate slides that are the outline slides, so it's okay to have a little bit more.
Yeah,
so you have some
outline slides.
So
that is like five.
So after you,
yeah.
So not taking into account those slides, you should have about 20 to 23 slides.
Maximum, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, in my experience, you should... A slide takes roughly a minute and a half. The actual slide, it is not the transition slide.
Right.
So I think 22 actual slides, you will be over time.
Mm-hmm.
You won't be able to finish. But you can be in your practice if you're able to go through them.
Yeah. Yeah, I would also recommend 20 slides.
Okay.
Without the outline slides.
Okay.
So here again, I think you need to use some animation. Because just these numbers, right now I'm confused where I should be looking at.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right, I have a whole bunch of numbers at me. I know some are bigger than others, right, and some are in bold, but where should I look? And that's the real question. I think what you should be doing here is that as you're speaking, you highlight pairs of numbers, right, so that they show up and people just focus on that, because that's what you're referring to. And you could highlight the one pair of numbers and then another pair and so on. Says, okay, similarly, we see substantial accuracy improvement when using some models for these other benchmarks. Yeah. And you highlight those at that point.
Yeah. So if you're not going to talk about the lower ones, just discard that. And you're only talking about rubies here, and you're only highlighting rubies here. So you can just present the first two rows, and then you say, okay, here are the results for and talk about the first two rows, and then and at the end just give like 10 seconds, say, okay, here are the results for the other ones, and that's it. Right? Because if you're not going to talk about it, it's distracting the audience. There's way too much numbers there.
I feel you don't even have to show it. Just say that in the paper you have three more, you could just say more numbers, and that's it.
Yeah, I think that. Also, that. I mean, yeah, exactly. But
drop it
if you're not going to talk about it. I mean, yeah, get rid of as much content as you can if you're not going to use it.
Right. So you can say I'll focus on the Rubis benchmarks and the numbers for the accuracy numbers for the file bench workloads also are similar and they are in the paper.
Okay.
You've never talked about those in your original presentation. I agree. And even when you just bring up these two, bring up, now you have lots of bold and non-bold numbers. And it's hard to figure out where to look. So you might want to use that
idea. Sequential.
Okay.
Yes. I was thinking that how about, because it seems like the bold or even the color is not making much difference. And it's hard to see exactly what you're highlighting. Right. I was thinking how about, can you do something like, I don't know how is that called, but to make everything more or more white, except the things that you are actually showing.
You mean gray out?
Gray out.
Or simply highlight it. Put a square around it.
That also works. Yeah.
Probably square is
but yeah. Something like green, you know.
But what about just using a bar graph?
Sajib, I think this whole table is hard to read. You should just nuke this table and put a bar graph.
Mm-hmm.
Just put Rubis browsing and Rubis bar graph columns, and then show bars for these things. I don't know why
they
are, because who cares about 68.86?
Yeah,
isn't that floating point decimal in a talk?
Yeah, I agree.
Just nuke the table. This table is too hard even with two of them, and four rows of numbers where each row has six numbers is way too much.
Yeah. And if you have a bar graph, you should animate that too, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely go for the bar graph. Animate so that first you show the accuracy numbers of the global model for the Rubis browsing, and then the accuracy numbers for the sub-model. Okay, so people can actually see the contrast, right?
Okay.
And then in the next slide, do that for Rubis bidding. So if we have similar numbers for the file bench, and they are in the paper.
Okay.
The other thing is that do you need the median and the 90th percentile?
I think average and 90th percentiles are here are more important.
Yeah.
More prominent.
Okay.
So I can remove the median.
Remove the median.
Remove the median, and you're going to convert this into a bar chart anyway.
Mm-hmm. So average and 90th percentile.
Yeah. Okay. And if you look at it in a bar chart fashion, it's just four columns, right? Per each experiment.
Yes.
Yeah. And another thing I would say, that before you make a slide, think of the takeaway point. So what's the takeaway point on?
So this is the one on the bottom?
Yeah, so if this is the thing that you want them to take away, this is a good point, then think what do you need to put on the slide just to make that point come across. And all you need is a bar graph with six or seven bars, and you say, I'm only presenting very few results here. There are a lot of results about other benchmarks in the paper. And at that point, you have done your job for the takeaway point.
Okay. That's a good idea.
I mean, the talk is a teaser for the paper. You don't have to say everything that's in the paper.
Yeah.
You need to just make sure that after listening to the talk, they go and read the paper because they are so excited by the talk itself.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you're a salesman on this. Technical sense.
So I would say when you send out the slides, below each of the slides in PPT, just put one line takeaway.
Mm-hmm.
And then your other people can comment if that takeaway is worth putting in the slides or the presentation, or we should merge two slides or delete something.
Yeah. So what indirectly what Ajay is saying is that revise this the slideshow based on our discussion today. So you have 20 slides, excluding those outline slides, and then put takeaway messages for each slide in the PPT file, right?
Okay.
In the comments section,
mm-hmm.
and then send it out to everyone on Monday. Send us a reminder email also that you have a practice talk on Tuesday. All right. Are we almost close to done?
Yeah. On this side, we can just, I think, delete it.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, you can remove this.
Okay. Don't just put them as backup.
As backup.
Backup
yeah.
slide.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, actually, the slide looks pretty good. The one that is yeah, this one looks pretty good though. So you can keep it for backup.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's because there wasn't much value added beyond what was already.
If we show the bar graphs, then it becomes meaningless. I think.
But then just have this one.
No, because the biggest one compared, the old one versus the sub-model one.
The global model was sub, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you may want to make the lines a little bit thicker.
Just, I will put it on the backup slide.
If you can, yeah, I think we struggled with this plot quite a bit. And ideally, you should redraw this plot for PowerPoint. As this was designed this way to fit within two columns of a page of submission, right?
Two columns or just one column?
Within two columns.
I mean, I think it will be nice if you could redraw the Rubin's browsing and bidding separately and
okay.
put those there so that, sorry, you just gave Rubin's bidding and browsing results on 50th and 90th percentile. But then you can say you might be wondering how well we do overall in the range because 50th percentile error is a statistical measure. It doesn't tell you the overall performance.
Yeah.
So now here are the graphs that show you that overall in the whole range, that's how we perform as compared to actual output. And at that point, you are convinced that you have done the overall statistical analysis and the point by point value, and the model is doing a good job.
Right. So by the way, you have to specify the x-axis.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, or otherwise it's just, I don't know,
and
number of colors.
And the y-axis too.
Or, so these slides are same, right? Or
this slide, yeah, I agree. I think it would be, I mean,
I would redraw the graph with the
graph. Redraw the graph so that, and also make it animated so that you have first the actual output and overlay what you predict on top of that.
Mm-hmm. If I do everything animation, then I would consume a lot of time.
No,
but you have time. You have one full week.
No.
But he has 3 days, but that's still a lot of time.
Not about preparing slides. I mean, I'm going to work 24/7.
So remember what Ajay is also saying. This is just a teaser for the paper. You don't have to go over all the content, right? You're going to remove a lot of content that I guess stick to more. Yes, you want to motivate people to read the paper, or to be excited about your work. At least if they don't want to read it.
If you're going to show this plot just like this, it's hard for people to find out what is actual and what is predicted, right?
Yeah.
But if you just overlay the predictive on top of the actual, it's much easier for people to see what happened.
Yeah, that doesn't take much time.
Yeah.
2 seconds.
Yeah, but I would like to see these graphs in the presentation.
You like
that idea? They have value because you're actually showing that what you're doing he's doing a good job in predicting the
accident.
So I think it's very important for that.
Okay. I think we have agreement on that. So this could go into a backup slide, the sensitivity, and also the next one.
Yes.
Because we don't have much time.
Yes.
Already over time.
Yes.
Yeah, this is all detail. I mean, this is all saying that you have done your homework.
Yeah.
And you don't put your homework on the presentation.
Put it in the backup slide.
Okay.
I agree. Both of them.
But I think that slide was more
important. At this point I gave up because there were too many graphs. So I would feel people would be tired.
I gave up in the next one. You didn't give up.
I think I can just really go to the VM sizing after that.
Yep.
Even if
you need to motivate also. You need to say, so far we have shown you the performance modeling on application based on these parameters. But what do we do with the sensing models? They take a lot of time to construct. It's a lot of hard work to have those models, but what do we do with them? Okay. And one of the cool applications that we have is sizing of the, which is a very well-known and very desirable problem to solve. And there are existing solutions out there that try to solve this problem. And you can say they don't do as good a job because they have no clue about the application performance itself.
Right.
There are startups whose job is to do VM sizing.
So here I don't know if you can actually make a figure out of this introduction. Think of whether you can do that. And some sort of figure which excludes the cycle of VM cycling. I'm not sure. I don't have any specific figure in mind. But just these three bullets, can we convert that into a figure? And this looks pretty, the slide looks pretty bland, right? With just these three bullets in it.
You can draw a three-dimensional cube and then put CPU on one axis, memory on another, and IO latency on the third one.
Three-dimensional what? A cube.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then again, we don't know how to size this thing, and if you don't do a good job at sizing, it costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
And people typically tend to buy bigger cubes because that gives them the peace of mind that the application will do fine.
Mm-hmm.
But in many cases, you may be buying a lot more of CPU or memory or I/O without really knowing about it.
You can also say that right now we have these fixed cube sizes, right? So either have this cube size or the next bigger available. But actually in reality, your sizing is not really, you know, you cannot make cubes. It's a more unstructured kind of block, right? Because your memory could be arbitrarily small or large. And if you restrict VMs to be of this fixed granularity of cube sizes, then you are sort of forcing over-provisioning or under-provisioning.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know about the three-dimensional cube, but if you can do something which is more graphic than these three bullets, I think it would be very useful.
Okay.
This is, I think this was pretty okay, this chart.
The legend is, can you make it complete? Instead of saying RBR, you say Ruby's browsing.
Okay, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you probably want to move the legend out because it's sort of interfering with the plot at this point.
You put it more towards the right.
Okay.
Or the frame will do it.
But somebody would look and say, oh, you are achieving target levels, but you are overachieving them.
Right.
Are you going to talk about that?
Yeah, it's on the next slide.
So this is so much complicated.
This is a complicated slide.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good idea. You know, this is nice for a paper, but yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
For a presentation, it's challenging.
It takes too long. It takes too long to explain and to understand.
This is like, so can you explain it actually? Because I don't remember.
I'm going to do it on Tuesday. Explain it for him quickly so he knows what's going on.
So far we talked about that we actually achieve the performance, but we have to make sure that the sizes we choose are optimal in nature. By being saying optimal, we are saying that if we choose some sizes that is lesser than what our performance model suggested, we're not going to get the target performances. Now, in order to verify whether our sizes are optimal, what we did, we ran the same experiment by reducing the sizes by some delta amount, let's say for CPU 100 megahertz, for memory less than 64 megabytes, and ran the same workload and see if we are still able to achieve that target performance. if we are able, if we still get the same target performance, that means we are not completely optimal. Now, in order to see how far are we from the optimal, we further reduce to 2 delta, 3 delta amount, and so on. And on this graph, we plot both the optimality in both dimensions for CPU, which actually represented by the lower, in E-square, the lower triangle represents the optimality of CPU, and the upper triangle represents the optimality of memory. Now, the higher, the darker the color of each triangle, it is farther away from being optimal. So that's
please take this slide out.
Okay.
I don't, this is going to help all people will understand. I think whatever takeaway you have from this slide, try to just say it. Just say that we also vary the size.
And put it on the previous slide.
From the optimal configuration that we came to see that how much can we lower the resources. And we found that in 60% cases, we were very close to the actual optimal and no reduction was possible. In some cases, the reductions were possible, and those are highlighted in the paper.
Yeah. Okay. Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is going to take you 2 minutes to explain. Or
two
more.
Minutes.
Or more, yeah. If you explain it. And if you're running short of time, this is an easy...
I'll probably skip it. I will hurry it and skip it in the end.
Yeah,
you can keep it in the back of the slide.
Keep it in the back of the slide. At this point, I think people will be tired.
Yeah.
They want the conclusion right away. So you know, it doesn't make sense.
I see.
It's too much information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, saying, okay, there's one last thing, and it's the most complicated thing I'm going to tell you.
Like Andy with a huge formula.
Just to keep it
by the time starting to finish this slide, once you approach 2 minutes, people would have forgotten what you said in the beginning. That's the worst part. Because while you were saying, I was getting lost at what's going on with this. Top one is CPU, or lower is memory, or where is I/O? It wasn't clear.
Yeah. Well, I/O was the input. But yeah, I'm sort of the designer of this graphs.
Not for in the paper.
I designed it for the paper, not for the presentation.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're not doing UI design.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be qualified.
Next,
our customers would have to have a PhD to understand that UI.
Yeah.
Okay. Now this is the conclusion slide.
Conclusions, again, they are a bit wordy, right?
Should I just follow one by one?
If you can follow one by one, that would be better, because all of the bullets at the same time, we don't know where to look.
Okay. I'll probably do it one by one.
Yeah, if you do it one by one, then that would be nice. And gray out the ones that you've already done, so people don't continue looking at the previous ones.
I think going one by one should be fine.
Yeah.
The first bullet, is that a conclusion or
that
motivation?
Also again, that same issue.
That's kind of a motivation.
Then why do we keep it there? I think you should have 2 or 3 conclusions. The conclusion is that machine learning models like AN and XVM can do a better job at doing performance modeling.
Mm.
Basic application requires some enhancements to actually reduce that. And models created can help with VM sizing. That's it. I mean, 90th percentile error drops from this to this is not a conclusion. That's a part of the result.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you can abstract one level up here.
And then the 65% optimal sizes, that is something should be there on the previous slide.
Mm-hmm.
You should say it helps with the VM sizing. That's it.
Yep. Okay.
So bullet 1, 4, and 6 can go away.
Hmm. Understood.
And then you have this one conclusion. I just did.
Okay.
That's
so bad, so that's good. So Sanjeev, I think you have a lot of work cut out for you, first to go through all the feedback again and carefully redo the presentation so you don't use more than 20 slides. Then figure out what you can what which slides you can make more graphic and try to do that. I think you've done all the work. It's now just the work of cutting down and making it
presenter more
and better looking, right? And those are kind of finishing touches that shouldn't take too much time. Send out a version of the presentation again to everyone, right, on Monday.
I'll send it on Monday.
Yeah, Monday, and also a reminder about this second practice round.
Okay.
On Tuesday. Right. I think it'll really, you're on Tuesday, I can see that you'll do much better.
Okay.
The new slides.
Okay. Any more comments, Ajay?
I think that's it. I would just say that make sure you don't have more than, but I think try to remove every text as long as you can make it a figure, just do it.
Hmm.
And for every slide, please mention a takeaway.
Yeah.
And you would see that the takeaway is not strong, you yourself would be willing to take the slide out.
Okay.
All right, great. Thanks a lot, Ajay. So we'll talk to you on Tuesday again.
Okay. Please don't do it at some early morning hour.
Well, this is sort of the only time that Kaushik can make it, but today he didn't show up, so I don't know what's going on.
What we can do, I can share the slides on Monday and take his feedback,
okay,
and do the talk later on.
Okay.
During the paper club, maybe.
Okay. So you mean take feedback from Ajay on...
Take feedback from the Kaushik through email.
Okay.
Because if we want to allow Kaushik, then we have to do it either 10 or 11. Yeah.
Okay.
There is no other way.
Okay.
Or at later at night.
But I thought this time worked for Kaushik. He told me at least
probably
at some point that
it. Maybe he has, it's Friday night, maybe.
Yeah.
Doing something else.
Yeah. I think he might have forgotten. So do send that reminder on Monday.
Okay.
So Ajay, what time do you want to do this? On Tuesday?